There's not going to be any factories. This is America, dude.
Yeah, we ain't making shit. Did you see, I sent this to you on Twitter, but did you see that during the European delegation, the European cock slobbering that happened in the morning yesterday?
Sit in a line. Yeah. Oh my god, that visual of like Macron and von der Leyen, and I don't remember.
Oh my god,
just so, sitting in that line in the hallway.
So embarrassing. And then I saw a snippet in an article about Zelensky told Trump, like, look, if you give away the rest of the Donetsk region, that'd be like if you gave away Florida. And then it said the president was struck by the analogy. Just imagine.
Trump be like, what?
I'd have to give away what? Oh my god.
So, and they're saying it's the Florida of Ukraine.
A real analogy would be like, imagine if you gave Texas back to Mexico. Like, because, like, you know, they speak the same language.
Be upset about that.
Yeah.
He would hate that.
He would hate it, but Florida, where he lives. That's, yeah, how you get him. Yeah. That's how you get him.
But is Zelensky from Donetsk? I thought that anyway.
Well, it's the analogy of like trying to get Trump to give a shit, like to truly give a shit, instead of being like, that's awful, we got to stop him. Instead of like, oh my fucking god, not Florida.
It's probably Shaviruk.
Is there a St. Petersburg in Florida?
There's got to be. No. With all those fucking Russians, there's bound to be, brother.
About to be called Trumpingrad.
Shvedok. He's from Central. I mean, it's not exactly the same. Oh shit! I'm looking on this map, and I haven't seen the control map recently. But they might have Zelensky's town. I don't know.
I'm not saying that Zelensky is from Donetsk. And Trump isn't from Florida. It's just like that's the comparison. To get, and like the Donetsk Texas analogy, I mean, it's like, you know, the Ukraine Russia war goes over some territory that's like either Russia or the Ukraine. I mean, everyone speaks the same language, blah blah blah. So like Texians, you know, the Mexicans that Texas is like, you're white or you're not white.
Texicans. Yeah.
Texicans. Yeah. So that's my analogy. Of my dense understanding of this geopolitical theater.
I don't know, by the way, I don't know if you saw the unbelievable Fox and Friends interview that went on for so long, where he was talking about the ill-fated Putin Trump summit in Russia, and the he's gonna have Putin and Zelensky call each other like to maybe meet up or whatever, which of course failed, right? Like failed within I don't know, 6 hours of this fucking interview. But just listening to him like half explaining shit to where like I don't know if he's talking about Ukraine or NATO or Russia. Because there's no segues between anything. He's not very clear, right? So at various parts of the conversation, it's like, who the fuck is he talking about now? It's just so tiring, man. Like, I wouldn't even say, like, it's depressing anymore, because it just is, you know, our day-to-day. But it's just so tiring to have to listen to this and to think, like, I guess this is the leader of the free world, and he might say something that really matters. I should probably listen to this, you know? It just sucks, man. It's not great.
I mean, that's how it was in the first administration. There was several Daily Show clips or Last Week Tonight of just like, and this time Trump called Fox and Friends, and just look at how enthralled they are. And it's just a clip of Fox and Friends just being like,
yeah.
While Trump's just blathering on.
Or them laughing nervously, or like there's a specific moment in that interview, by the way, like at the very end where he's being Trump, right? So he's going off topic. So he's not even talking about Russia, Ukraine anymore. He's talking about Fox and Friends and like the election again and like all this shit. And then he like out of nowhere, he's talking about the host whose name I can't remember. It's not Brian Kilmeade. It's the black guy. And he's like, and I know this guy, he supported me even before I started running. And I remember that. And then he's like talking about Sean Hannity taking the other like lady out for drinks later. And he's like clearly having so much more fun than he was talking about anything that he does for a job. And it's just a reminder, right, that he should be doing that. He should be like a TV personality. instead of the motherfucking president.
Yeah, like after he, you know, decides to abscond the throne and like, did I use that word right? Did I mean abdicate?
Abdicate. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, what? I don't fucking. But basically,
get his fat ass off of.
Yeah, whenever Trump decides to leave the White House, he should just become like, he should start his own Punch Bowl News. Be the DC.
He should do that now.
Site.
He should just leave now. It's, dude, the thing with like the Russia-Ukraine shit is he goes on and on. He's like I stopped all these ways. He's just telling crazy lies. And then at the very end of it, he's like, they're like, Mr. President, like, what do you think is going to happen? He's like, well, you know, sometimes there's just nothing you can do. he's just like kind of doing the like shoulder shrug. And he's like, sometimes it breaks one way. Sometimes it breaks the other. Too bad. You know, it's like. Jesus,
so funny.
Can we have somebody that takes this shit more seriously?
What I would love is, okay, so Trump after post White House Trump, maybe 2 hours a night or 2 hours once a week on HLN called Trump Vestigates, where, you know, he's basically like Nancy Grace or doing like transvestigations or something like
Trump Vestigations.
Yeah.
Let's go.
That or Judge Donnie T, and just give him a judge
show.
It was like, Your Honor. And, yeah, and it'll be like, and then just the bailiff, just make the bailiff like, you know, a black person who just like daps Trump up all the time and makes Trump feel really cool, because that's, you know, that's what Trump needs. They could do little skits where they like go get lunch or something. It's like, Your Honor, we're running late. He's like, let's ride. And then they get in a motorcycle and like ride out together or something. We should just convince him that that's what his job is. And just,
it doesn't like, have to be an actual minority. It could be just one of those like Florida rappers, right? That are like,
oh
white,
my God, the guy that has
or,
the guy that has like the tattoos all over his face. The devil is a Democrat.
That hell yes, brother. I mean, I'm certain that man is white racially, but
he's not white. He's actually
he's not white.
He's Canadian.
Oh God damn it! No, not another one.
That's right. He's not even one of us. You're not even one of us.
Yeah, I'm not even one of y'all.
You should start a rap career. Your right wing grift.
Not one of y'all.
Yeah.
Not like y'all.
I'm not like y'all. There you go.
I ain't like y'all.
Okay. You know, well, it is Tuesday, August 19th at 8:35 p.m. Hey, listener, this propaganda is joined as always by Connor and Alec. We've taken a short little hiatus. We had an episode 51 recorded. A decision was made to pull that episode because I just kind of went off on NPR and my time working at NPR and told a story that, like, I was just airing dirty laundry and like, oh, we can't air this. And just like angry. I was just pissed off. I was pissed off about Texas politics, and the episode was not to my liking. So
it's too bad, folks. It was a great episode, but we flew a little bit too close to the sun. I also got really, I got worked up and said some things that might be legally actionable. So I'm glad we got rid of those two.
There are conversations Alec and I have that are podcast episodes, and then there are phone call episodes. And it's like we accidentally recorded a phone call. Nothing that would have gotten us canceled, just fired and sued. And
I would have to apologize
to some old friends and colleagues. But today, we're talking about something
jobs.
A little different. Alec, you called me in a tizzy the other day. You were worked up about something going on online. Why don't you break it down for him, Alec?
Okay, so
speak a little truth for him.
All right, so the Dune Imperium expansion that has been put into ranked mode is not as good as the last expansion. We have two expansions and we only should have one. And the problem is that we're playing both Immortality and Rise of Ix, and it has to be one or the other. We can't have, there's too much going on in the games, Connor. I was platinum in Rise of Ix, and I can't get out of fucking silver in this dual expansion format. Okay? I can't get anything.
And this is Dune Imperium?
This is Dune Imperium, the board game on Steam. It's a very good game.
Okay. I have that. I have yet to play it. I want to play it. because I'd like for us to be able to do something together that's not just yelling about what's happening online. Like,
I don't know.
My friendship with Alec has suddenly become very stressful.
Something else. I don't know. I don't know if this bit's going anywhere. I'm not going to lie. It's a bit of like recent news, and it's probably a bit of like overly maybe online news, because I think if you're not like a Twitter or a Substack person, basically, I don't think that you're ever going to come into contact with this. But it's worth mentioning, not only because people are obviously talking about it within those circles, right, that we turn in, but there's like a piece of media that's been released as a result of this that is so like laden with like subtext, right? Innuendo and a kind of forced framing, right? And like all these things that we that Connor and I really notice when we watch pieces of propaganda media, that you really can't go into enormous detail and kind of like dissect when you're watching a piece of long form media like a movie, but this has all those things. And so what I'm talking about is a trailer. I mean, it's inexplicable what this is, but we just have this now. It's a trailer for a magazine, in quotes. That magazine is probably more like a website or a Substack, right? A blog that you can subscribe to, more so than a printed magazine, although we'll see where this goes, right? And it's called The Argument, right? It's I believe it's kind of a substructure of Semaphore, right? Which is one of these online journalistic outfits, a real actual journalistic outfit, Semaphore. And The Argument is an offshoot targeted at liberals, right? And very liberal coded. And they've released a trailer. It's 4:39, and
I have not seen this trailer, but I know about The Argument.
Okay. So Connor knows about The Argument, the magazine, which announced, that it was, coming down the pike a couple days ago, right? And then they released a bunch of promotional materials, some of which Connor's seen, but he's not seen this trailer, right? So we're going to go through, and what I'm going to attempt to do is, this trailer is so laden with these propagandistic and framing aspects, and all this weird stuff, all these descriptions to historical myth, like American historical, like mythology and stuff, I think it's pretty vacuous, right? That I think it's actually worth going through and microanalyzing, like almost frame by frame, this little trailer and commenting on it. So it's going to be a weird episode, but we're going to try it out.
And we'll post this this link in the show notes so you can watch along as well.
So this is what. So we'll just start, right? This is a tweet from August 18th, 2025. 5:15 a.m. So nice and early in the morning. Liberalism deserves better, reads the tweet. And this is from The Argument Mag on Twitter.
Okay. Liberals used to stand for things.
So liberals used to stand for things. And then what do we see? A women's suffrage, New Deal, Civil Rights Act, there's MLK and JFK. There's a war on poverty.
It seems like all we do is
see what I mean? Five references to five different historical movements, almost none of which liberals were a part of as that structure at the time.
Has said he's not sure he'd run for president if Donald Trump wasn't running too.
I want to do something different. My name's Jerusalem Demsis. I'm an opinion journalist.
Opinion journalist.
What did that mean? Okay.
So, I mean, that's the thing that you, right, talk to me about. I think, did you send me the thing about opinion journalism? It's like, what?
I'm launching a new media.
We'll get back to it.
Okay.
Called The Argument. We're not just going to explain. We're going to persuade. We're not just going to diagnose the problem. We're going to fight for the solutions. But let's rewind.
Okay. So that was the first 40 seconds. So let's dive a little bit kind of closer into it. So we start with one of these classic, I don't know what this is called, right? But I'll call it like
a microphone.
No. So there's the first 3 seconds of this video showcase this thing that I've seen a bunch before, and you'll know it if you watch this little trailer, which I'll call like a behind the scenes cold open, right? where somebody's, they're like in the, like during the video, they're going to be in frame with like a backdrop and they're sitting on a chair or whatever. But the very first like instance shows them like framed from way further back. So you'll see like the backdrop and their mic stand and the room behind them or whatever. Right.
Yeah. You
see him getting ready and she's adjusting the microphone. Right. Yeah. And like already this is actually, propagandistic. It's framing. It's exactly framing. It's both physically framing, right? And that like she's not in frame, it's not focused on her, but like it conveys something, right? What it's attempting, I think, to convey is like a certain authenticity. It's kind of down to earth, right? It's letting you in on a little secret, right? That the backdrop is a backdrop, right? And that we're filming on a small set. It kind of projects like this, like a low production budget feel. I think one of the key things about these is that there's like a feeling of like corporate polish, right? If the entire video is just on set with very, very clean transitions and stuff, this is kind of breaking that mold, right? Just for a second, right? It like breaks the fourth wall just for a moment, right? And projects that kind of like authenticity. And so we're only 4 seconds in, right? And it says Jerusalem Demsis or Demses. She pronounced her name and you'll hear it, right? Opinion journalist. Now, Connor, I don't know what the fuck an opinion journalist is. I assume it's somebody that reports on people's opinions. Is that right?
No, I wouldn't say so. If I had to take a guess, and I'm guessing they don't really define it here in this ad, but if I had to take a guess of what an opinion journalist is, it's probably like a new Gonzo style of journalism. I'm giving you my opinion. I'm giving you stats. I'm giving like, it's just a fancy word I would say for pundit. It's like,
yeah. Okay.
You know, they're creating a new title, a new class, so that they can finally acknowledge what I believe to be a real shortcoming of journalism, which is that both sidesism stuff. And we kind of got into it and did a lost episode on NPR of just like, should we feel bad about genocide? We'll let you.
Yeah. Decide. Yeah. Yes. Yes. The forced neutrality of NPR. Which
right.
Is the thing
which is, I mean, I'm of the belief that like, look, there's a reason Fox. There's a reason Fox is number one. And what my theory is that they claim that they're fair, balanced, like that's their motto, right? But we all know they're in on the joke, right? They know they're conservative. We know they're conservative. And I think people really take to that. I think that people want it. I think that there's a reason why podcast and legacy media is dying out and why people are turning to Hassan or Joe Rogan or Chapo for lefties out there. They're sick and tired of watching the news and they're sick and tired of being told like we're not biased. It's like, well, you are.
Yeah, I will say, right. Like, I think there's, and you'll see with like the argument, if we talk about any of their other like promotional stuff, there is like a real blending of news and opinion that I actually find like that obviously, right? Like the thing that you're, I think, describing is that those things are inextricable. And for large swaths of audiences, I don't think they want them, right? Like a total divorce, right? This by this projected and kind of false sense of neutrality, right? That is always right, wrong. But also can be just very, very annoying, right? Because these outlets, right? The large newspapers like the fucking New York Times, right? Or whatever. They obviously have an opinion. Obviously they have a fucking editorial line. It's so clear, but they pretend like they don't. And that's aggravating, right?
I also think that this is like her being able to kind of liberate while also legitimize themselves. So like Jerusalem Demsas, she used to work for the Atlantic and she left it recently.
Yes.
And if you look at a lot of the people that are brought on to the argument, it's Matt Iglesias, known op-ed writer.
They're all op-ed writers.
They're all op-ed writers. Matt Brunig, Derek Thompson, like these are all, to your point, op-ed writers. So it's just like, okay, what if we had op-eds with a little bit more? What if an op-ed writer reached out and got a quote instead of Googling? What if they actually did some journalism? And yeah, maybe that's what we'll find. I mean, what we may find at the end of this is that the argument produces insanely, embarrassingly biased journalism. Where it's like,
yeah,
I didn't bother to reach out to the opposition for a quote because I don't want to deal with the cognitive dissonance of that.
It is funny that I thought you would take more umbrage with the idea of opinion journalists, because it's one of the first things where I was like, that's insane. Like, a thing to put on like the first, you know, in the first 4 seconds of your video, that's literally your title, is crazy. But so by the way, so let's transition. Let's talk about Jerusalem Demsis. So I'm going to describe her real quick because I'm looking like directly at her because the video is paused, right? So again, we're conveying something, right? She's conveying something. She's a black woman, right? She's got like highlights in her hair. She looks like hip. She's sitting on like a chair, like a sofa chair kind of, right? She's got big kind of hip glasses. And she looks like very relaxed, right? At ease. She's got like her leg up on her knee. And so like, who is this person, right? So she's Eritrean American, right? She's got a crazy fucking Wikipedia page, which, by the way, 100% she wrote, right? Because it's got way for a 30-year-old that worked at Vox for a while and did some staff writing for like The Atlantic, right? She's way too many quotes about her, like, about her own personal ideology when it comes to her own personal argument when it comes to like housing policy, which, by the way, just like carbon copy.
Well, hang on. I think you're being a little cynical here. I don't know if we can confidently say that she wrote everything herself. What I will say is that every single citation is from 2025. So what I would say, if she didn't write it herself, I can't prove that. But, you know, this video dropped yesterday, has nearly a million views. It's been the discourse of Twitter, at least political Twitter. So I would imagine that if not her, then like people were very quick to put together a Wikipedia page. Sure. Go up within like a few hours of something.
If it wasn't her, I mean, if she did not write this Wikipedia page, then like a PR or like ad agency did. So I don't know. It's not a person of like any particular note. The particular note of them, right, is, and we'll come back to this, is how many times they have absolutely glazed the note, like all of that stuff that became abundance liberalism, whatever you want to call that, that culminates with the book, right, the Ezra Klein Thompson book. Mm-hmm. She's written a lot to that effect. Right. Like, yeah. The problem with American housing is NIMBYism. And yeah, the problem with the American economy and politics is also, by the way, kind of like NIMBYism. A lot of it's kind of like NIMBYism. What we need are market solutions. Right. Basically. Right. What
she
we need
definitely, she's definitely very pro. Like, she writes about homelessness a lot. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't go full abundance and say like zoning is the only problem. She does criticize exclusionary zoning. And this is all stuff we're getting from the Wikipedia page, because that's everything that we have on her. She's also the founder of The Argument.
Yeah. That's why she's here, right? Oh, yeah. By the way, right? She's the new founder and editor of The Argument, right? Which is the magazine in question.
Mm-hmm. Used to stand for things.
And then we get a
Liberals
bunch of those shots of old of newspaper articles, right, and like pictures. You get those snippets of old newspapers, like the New Deal and women's suffrage and like the Civil Rights Act, MLK. Like, all these images flash before your eyes, and to me, this is messaging, right? This is the Democratic Party. This is like their ad reel going up into a speech at the DNC, right? That showcases all of these great victories of the Democratic Party and liberalism, right, or whatever. She's talking about liberalism writ large, right? Because it's not just the Democratic Party, right? Because Republicans historically have done. Because she'll talk about Lincoln right later, but this is right. Like, liberals brought you all these good things.
I want to do something different. My name's Jerusalem Demsis. I'm an opinion journalist. I'm launching.
So she showcases a bunch of her staff writing and op-eds, right, from The Atlantic. So she's like credentializing, right?
A new media company called The Argument. We're not just going to explain. We're going to persuade. We're not just going to diagnose the problem. We're going to fight for the solutions.
Okay. So we're not just going to explain. We're going to persuade. We're not just going to diagnose the problem. We're going to fight for solutions, right? So the we here and the we're going to fight for solutions. This is a newspaper, ma'am, right? Like, I don't know what fighting for solutions for news. I assume you mean state our opinions, right? Like, I think there tends to be like this conflation that I think it's like more and more present in like the internet age, where saying an opinion is, we often use these like verbs like fight when we mean have an opinion and make it publicly known and write something to that effect, right? Or she's blurring the lines between the argument, the magazine, and a political movement or a party like the Democratic Party, which is odd to me. Or at least like there is this active blurring there, right? Where we're fighting, and that means I'm reading an article or I'm writing an article.
Well, newspapers have a historic tradition of, you know, there used to be like several newspapers for different political parties, different political affiliations. Newspapers in America do have a history of being like, you know, a way to fight for social justice or social change. So this might be a going back to form, especially if they're going like real, real old school with like John Dewey style approach to journalism.
Like if this is like a union newspaper or
not like so much a union newspaper, but just like, hey, let's take the mask off and like say like, hey, we are a workers newspaper or a union newspaper, or hey, let's say that we are a liberal newspaper. Let's say we're a conservative newspaper. This seems to, I mean, they say that they're liberals, but we'll see.
I don't even know how much of a newspaper they are.
But let's rewind. In 1955, the conservative public intellectual William F. Buckley said that conservatism stands athwart history, yelling stop. But when I look around at the political landscape today, it's not conservatives I mainly see yelling stop. It's liberals.
Pushback against liberals. Offshore wind projects.
We want to stop it.
A majority of residents in the Hacienda Heights community say they are against these housing plans.
We don't want this here.
Liberals find ourselves.
Notice the NIMBY stuff, right? She's like, I don't see William F. Buckley saying stop as in like revanchism, as in like return to the old or do not progress. I see liberals doing stop, which means don't put a wind farm here, don't put a homeless shelter here, or just some lady saying we don't want it here, right?
Liberals find ourselves feeling like the world is moving too quickly. Like we can't even get a handle on everything that's going on.
So all these things that are flashing are things from the Trump administration. She's saying things are moving too quickly, right? And they're all things that the Trump administration is like instituting, right? They're just headlines ripped from like the past year, literally, right?
Not like, dear God, please just make it stop. Liberalism deserves better.
Liberals are saying make it stop. And it's like, well, yeah, they lost like, but then we use all of these like Trump administration headlines, and it's like, yeah, Trump won the election, right? Of course, you're probably not going to like what he's doing. I mean, Trump is more destructive than a lot of other leaders, but I don't know how much that has to do with the dynamic of liberalism at large, right? I guess.
Look at its record. American independence was founded on liberal principles. Those same values inspired revolutionaries and reformers around the world. Liberal economics.
So we're doing liberal, we're doing founding father shit, constitution fucking.
Liberal economics built modern industrial prosperity, and it created the social safety net that made sure that we could take care of people who could not take care of themselves.
Liberalism economics.
We have social security, sure that we could take.
Do you see what I mean about this? Like it's so loaded, like every single line is loaded. Liberalism is why we have social security, clean water and workplace safety regulations, she's about to say.
Care of people like, who could not take care of themselves. Liberalism is why we have social security, clean water, and workplace safety regulations. And liberal principles are the reason why we are the only nation in the world to define ourselves not just by where we come from, but what we believe in.
Liberal principles are the reason why we are the only nation in the world to define themselves not just by where we come from, but what we believe in. And it's like, lady, have you heard of like ISIS?
Or
those
China?
Guys all define themselves about what they believe in. Every nation that is like politically, that has a political system or not, it's not even, it's just everybody, right? Has some statement about these are our values. We're the only people. Like liberalism won fucking social security and clean water. Like what?
Isn't fascism also like deeply invested in national identity?
I mean, famously, a bunch of fascists also really, really like environmentalism, right? Like, I'm sorry. These things are not like there's a conflation between liberalism, like a political theory, and there's liberalism, the political structure, and then there's liberalism as in like a political party, right? Like a personal ideology, right? Like I like the Democrats because they are liberal, right? And she's counterposing that to structures and ideologies, I suppose, that are illiberal, and she'll say that in a little bit, right? But none of these things are unique to liberal structures, because illiberal societies also have fucking clean water, right? They have social safety nets that are a whole lot fucking better than ours, right? Or many of them are, right? They can have workplace safety regulations that are a whole lot better than ours. Like, what are we doing here, right? This is a level of like ideological front loading that I expect out of conservative shit, right? That I expect out of like those what's that stupid movie, the like America is Not an Accident that we watched?
Yeah.
Where you have to front load this for boomers because their fucking brains are on fire all the time, right? I don't expect this from like from Semaphore, right? From like a smart, I guess, liberal journalistic outfit.
Don't just take it from me. Abraham Lincoln, famously a Republican, once said that immigrants could coin the Declaration of Independence as though they were blood of the blood and flesh of the flesh of the men who wrote it.
Okay, I'm so sick of the Abraham Lincoln Republican
shit. We're doing, Abraham Lincoln, who was a Republican, right? So we get a, is this called a pull quote, right?
Yeah. This is such like a tired thing that Republicans do, and I think she should be embarrassed by leaning into it. Saying like famously a Republican. As if party values don't shift. Yeah, the party that freed the slaves and also wants us to go back using Confederate names on all of our army bases and statues. You fucking idiot.
I think she's doing a like reach out to like anti-Trump Republicans, I suppose. She's doing like a both sides thing. Right. She's like, it's not just the Democrats. Let's give it to Abraham Lincoln, a Republican. But again, right, you're correct. This is such a fucking stupid point. Right. It's so pointless. Right. To say like, hey, by the way, this guy was the other party 160 years ago. Right. Yeah. Before a famous and actually very modern like party flip on a pretty major issue, which is like, how do we feel about black people, right?
Yeah, yeah. Read Abraham Lincoln's letters to his friends to see how he really felt about this shit.
Yeah.
Trump and the MAGA coalition are engaged in a reactionary project to remake America into a tribalistic, isolated, and ultimately poorer version of itself. They're using tariffs to destroy the economic interdependence that made America wealthy through trade and alliances.
Okay. Trump and the MAGA coalition are engaged in a reactionary project to remake America into a tribalistic, isolated, ultimately poor version of itself. No complaints here. No comment, right? That sounds correct to me. They're using tariffs to destroy the economic interdependence that made America wealthy through trade and alliances, right? This is actually enormously ideologically loaded, but I don't know if we literally have time to go into it, right? Like, that is true that, let's say that trade did make America insanely wealthy, right? If we're talking about in the modern age, but it's because the Second World War destroyed all of the other like major productive economies, and the U.S. Yeah. was the main exporter for the world and financier, right?
Forcibly, that's so in some cases with countries that we signed treaties with.
Not just the ones we signed treaties with. Don't forget, Connor, the ones we fucking occupied after the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Another new era of Trump tariffs. They're bringing back old world levels of corruption right in front of our eyes.
Old world levels of corruption. They're bringing back old world levels of corruption right before our eyes. I agree with like the sentiment here for sure, right? Like it does seem really crazy. Old world tech like typically means like Europe. I don't know why like Europe's getting shafted here. Lobbying means that bribery is essentially legal in the United States anyway, right? Yeah. The hilarious thing about Trump is you can just give him a plane and he's like, oh great, cool, right? Yeah. Awesome. By the way, that's also legal, right? The plane was given to like a fucking LLC that he controls, right? Or his like estate or his stupid library that he gets to control. It's fine. It's legal, right?
Yeah,
maybe consider that, liberals.
A $400 million payoff bribe from a nation overseas.
And they're persecuting Americans for exercising their basic freedoms.
The abduction of Mahmoud Khalil.
That should be a cause for concern for any American who believes in free speech, who believes in due process.
That is true. I would have liked to see more of that at the time, right? Because the people that are writing this were not crying fucking insane tears from Mahmoud Khalil when he was imprisoned in Louisiana. Thank you very fucking much.
Right. Are there any clips about why Mahmoud was imprisoned?
Oh, no. Yeah, well, so
signs?
You did see the words Gaza once in the quick, super fast cut of all the Trump headlines. And then in several places, you could see it had been the word Gaza had been actually cropped out. But there was one headline where they literally could not crop it out. It was the one that said imminent starvation or whatever, right? But they're not going to mention Israel, and they're definitely not going to mention Gaza. So,
when the post-liberal right describes the nation they're seeking to build, they're not talking about what made America great. They're talking about what made other nations weak. They think the circumstances of your birth should determine your destiny. I think the most important things about you are unchangeable and hereditary.
From Africa, from Asia.
I would argue that a lot of liberals also believe that, to be
honest.
They're
poisoning the blood of our country. That's what they've done.
America is for America.
So they're going to showcase a bunch of very racist stuff that Trump does. No disagreement here, right? Extremely racist.
New writer, however we want to define what it is.
One of the most pressing problems for us to face is to redefine the meaning of American citizenship in the 21st century.
This is not America. And the post-liberal.
This is not America. Value statement. This is not America. This is very clearly America, right? This is, you're making a value statement. This is not an America you like, right? Or one that you respect or you want, right?
The 21st century.
This is not America. And the post-liberal left is little better.
Right? Zoom in on another Atlantic column by David Leonard. The hard truth about immigration, if the United States wants to reduce inequality, it's going to need to take an honest look at a contentious issue. I don't know who she's talking about here, right? But if I have any guess, right, this is going to be a magazine that punches left very hard and not at people who are writing in the Atlantic.
We are raising tariffs on about $18 billion worth of Chinese imports. President Biden is taking this action today to defend America's workers.
Defend America's workers. So it seems like they're roping in Biden tariffs in post-liberal left. So Biden himself was a post-liberal left figure, which is shocking to me, I guess.
My take on that is that they're showing, because, you know, she earlier in the clip had talked about like using tariffs to destabilize trade and like weaken America. And I think this is an example of you can use tariffs to benefit American workers. But, you know, tariffs for ye and not for me, tariffs are a tax, blah, blah, blah.
The framing here to me suggests that this is bad, right? She says the post-liberal left is little better. And then there's all these clips. It's just very odd.
Yeah.
And America's workers,
they reject the fact that many people in this country simply disagree with them. And they look down on the hard,
They reject the fact that many people disagree with them. Them rejecting it is not the problem. The problem is that they won the motherfucking election, right? The problem is not that you have an exchange of opinions and they punched you in the face, right? That they were mean to you at a dinner party. You lost the election to the liberals, right? By the way, you failed to make the fucking argument, right? As we said in the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm. Countries simply disagree with them. And they look down on the hard, unglamorous work of building a pluralistic society.
Building a pluralistic society. I don't know. This is not why Democrats lose elections. It's not because they failed to build a pluralistic society. It's because life in America sucks and they don't promise you anything.
But if liberals are going to win this fight, they've got to stop just being umpires and radio announcers. They've got to get ready to play. It's one thing to point out that AI could lead to...
Umpires, they got to get ready to play. I don't know. Connor, you've commented, not that you have to now, you've commented about these weird analogy framing devices. This kind of awkward. I don't know.
Yeah, umpires need to get ready to play is fucking weird, especially when you consider, like, I've heard the umpire analogy was used by Beto O'Rourke recently, and it got him in a little bit of fake hot water, you know, a fake scandal of saying, like, there are no umpires, there are no rules, like, so we just got to win.
Wait, he said there are no rules?
Beto, yeah, because in reference to the Texas redistricting fight.
Oh, okay.
Because he's like, the umpires aren't paying attention anymore, and it's like, whatever. Yeah, I don't know. The umpires need to get ready to play. So the rule, I guess. Wait, does she see journalists as the umpires?
Yes.
Because
she's her.
Yeah. Oh no, you self-important fool! People have to listen to the umpires. The umpires can kick you out of a game.
The authority. They're the government, actually, of baseball.
If you are a journalist listening to this podcast in particular, then you probably agree with me, but you are not as powerful and effective as you think you are. You just aren't. If we follow up what Alex said at the beginning of the episode, if you're not on Twitter or Substack, you don't even fucking know about this. You insignificant speck. Oh, my goodness.
And they, by the way, you never will, right? Like, I don't think anybody outside of listeners to this podcast, people on Twitter, or people aware of this, like Semaphore readers or whatever, are ever going to know what the argument is.
This reminds me of the Zine Fest here in Houston. Shout out to Zine Fest if y'all are listening. But somebody once described, like, some people don't have any money when they go to table at Zine Fest. So they grab a pile of their zines, and when they go to other tables, they ask if they can trade, right? So there's no new money coming in. There's just, like, a stilted economy of just, like, zines being circulated around. And we're all learning everybody's opinions and thoughts and looking at their art. That's great. But none of us are making any money off of it. And I think about that when I think about Atlantic articles of... Does anyone in your office, Alec, or your factory come in and be like, man, I can't tell you how pissed I am about Maddie Iglesias' new piece in the fucking...
God.
No, of course not. They're telling you, like, actually the moon landing was fake, and I heard about it on this podcast. Yeah, oh my gosh, this is sad. This is so... There's a layer of sadness to this that makes me sympathetic to that... makes me pity them a little bit. Yikes. Okay.
AI could lead to mass unemployment.
Wrong. Fake. AI will lead to mass unemployment. Incorrect.
Or that things have gotten way too expensive. Or that young men and women just seem to hate it.
Things have gotten way too expensive. If liberals were going to convince the public of something, what would they do? That we should do price controls? Like, what do you want to do about the inflation, right? Like, if you're not going to be informing, right, it's what she's saying, you're going to be convincing and solving problems. What is the solution to that, right? Because I remember when the inflation was up under Biden, and everybody, like, all these same motherfuckers in the Atlantic were saying everything was fine, right? The thing that they kept repeating was that you are wrong, actually, and the Biden administration is correct, and inflation is down, right? So stop bitching before it costs us the election. The solution is... I don't know, price controls or some shit, right? That's the solution to the fucking prices being too high.
Each other.
Men and women hating each other. This is fake. I don't know.
That's not fake.
Incels or something.
That's not fake. That's a real phenomenon going on. There's an uptick in Gen Z women dating millennial men, as well as an uptick in Gen X women dating millennial men because, you know, we're the most progressive generation of
men.
Millennial men are fucking. Millennial
men are fucking.
Yeah, this is an actually real thing that's happening. This is an odd phenomenon. Just millennial men are more progressive than Gen X or Gen Z men, and the ladies love us for it.
That's crazy. Wait, so you're telling me that millennial men are doing the hypergamy or whatever? What's that thing from, like, incel shit where, like, the 20% of dudes get, like, all the they get all the women?
Yeah. I'm
we're doing that. I'm doing that.
Yeah, millennial men are just doing really well right now. Instead of looking at I'll say this. Andrew Tate and his ilk are obsessed with finding high value women, right?
Sure.
You know what I say? All women have high value.
So brave, Connor.
I don't think it's brave. You want to know why I don't think it's brave? Because I'm not scared to say it.
Yeah, there you go.
You can't be brave unless you're doing something you're scared to do. I'm not scared to say that, ladies. The one lady that listens to our podcast, Lady,
you're beautiful out there. You're beautiful. You're natural. It's wonderful.
You're beautiful. You're natural. You're wonderful. But I'm taken. I'm sorry. Good luck.
Yeah. You know, join I have to add to this. High value our, women. I can't afford you, babe. I can't afford you.
Join our Discord and find some schlub to treat you with respect.
Yeah. We got a lot of schlubby dudes that listen to this podcast, some of whom I know for a fact are single. So, ladies, hit up the Discord.
Yeah.
But not me or Connor.
Yeah, no. Unfortunately, we're taken.
All right. So apparently real. Men and women hating each other, fighting like cats and dogs, real.
Another much harder thing to argue for policies and for change that could make all of this better. Because it's when you move from analysis to argument, from diagnosis to persuasion. When the real
and poo-poo to pee-pee.
Happens.
Oh, wait, I missed it. Can you go back?
Because it's when you move from analysis to argument.
Analysis to argument.
From diagnosis to persuasion.
To persuasion.
That's when the real change happens.
That's when the real change happens,
also
Connor.
Also when people get mad at you, which, you know.
Just absolutely vacuous. I mean, this is a Kamala Harris speech at this point, right? It's just, we're just
you
saying
go
stuff.
From
we don't care.
Analysis to argument.
Argument.
Diagnosis to persuasion.
To persuasion.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, now it should be diagnosis to treatment, right? Because that's the through line. The doctor diagnoses and then they treat an illness.
Better. Because it's when you move from analysis to argument, from diagnosis to persuasion, that's when the real change happens. It's also when people get mad at you, which, you know, we don't care. Every week on our...
We don't care. You very much care. You made this and you said that in the thing that you made. You definitely care.
The diagnosis, I'm still stuck on that because it's like, this person was the president of the William and Mary debate team.
Yes, she's a debate lord.
And some of her analyses are not, or her analogies are not the best. If you're going to, like, the umpires need to start playing. Never watched a baseball game in your life, I bet. This doctor thing, yeah, it's not matching up. You're right. And I got to let it go. I'm just stuck on it for some reason. Keep it
going. No. This is the kind of thing that I think I'm not shitting, right? Like these kinds of little omissions that, like, if you're turning your brain off, if this is just like running in the background, you're like, yeah, it's just a commercial.
Yeah.
Right. And then like any amount of analysis, you're like, did an AI fucking write this? Like, or is it just bad writing? Right. Or Connor, like you brought up the fact that she was a debate club president. You know, for a fact that debate is, a lot of debate is presentation, is the way in which you argue, is the confidence that you assume.
Yeah.
The quickness with which you respond to stuff and say that you responded to stuff. It doesn't have to be structure and substance, right? Mm-hmm. It can be I will respond to you, right? Remember all that blocking and like LD debate
where
You say that you address something, you bring up a counter argument, and then there actually isn't any time to divine whether or not that counter argument is cogent, right? Yeah. And actually kind of defeats the point. I think that's a lot of the same kind of reasoning that we have here.
Okay.
Our podcast and every day on our newsletter, we're going to bring together self-described liberals, libertarians, conservatives, and socialists. I won't agree with everyone we publish.
Okay. So this is the thing that I brought you that blew my top. And then I called you and I was like, we have to talk about this. When she says we're going to bring together liberals, libertarians, conservatives, and socialists, right? Those are broadly speaking for, I guess, disparate ideological groups, right? Mm-hmm. One could say, at least for like American politics. There is not going to be an ideological through line to the things that these people say, right? And that's okay. Right. If they're writers, if they're doing journalism, surely their political background doesn't matter that much. Right. That's why you have an editor. So I made to understand, Connor. Right. If they're doing op-eds, well, then their name's on the top of them. Right. So like that shouldn't matter that much. Right. They're going to conflict. But, you know that Connor, right, when he writes an op-ed, has this political background, you know, when Alec does and whenever Jerusalem does, she's got this third. Right. But the magazine is attempting to make arguments, right? What is promised here is that we're going to do persuasion. We're actually going to do, we're going to have, by the way, presumably an ideology that guides us, right? Some kind of political vision of what we want the future for America being, and we're going to argue for that. How the fuck are you going to do that with people that have nothing to do with each other ideologically, right? Or are we doing this thing that, like, I've described to you, Connor, on the phone, where, like, you hear this a lot, and I guess the implication from liberals is we're going to get all these different people's opinion, and they're like, they're kind of like players on a baseball team, and you have a catcher, and you got a fucking pitcher, and some outfielders.
And even the umpires are going to start playing.
And even the umpires are going to start playing. Like a D&D group, and you have a fucking cleric, and you have a warrior, and you have a wizard, right? And they all have different skill sets, and those meld together to solve the problem. And it's like, wait, what? Like, I don't know, Connor. Like, it's hard for me to grasp anything that I would hear a libertarian say that I think is like an apt response to anything that's going on in American politics now, right?
Oh no, I hard disagree. I got a lot of sympathy for my libertarian brothers. Libertarians do. I mean, an ideological libertarian does not like the militarization of the police. They believe that police should go back to community policing and beat reporting, or not beat reporting, beat policing. They do not believe in the war on drugs.
I guess, like, but so it sounds to me like a good-natured, right, liberal would say the same, right? Not one of these, like, San Francisco freaks who's like, but like your mom that votes for the Democratic Party, she's probably also going to be like, yeah, these cops are bad. Right. Except the Barry Weiss ones that live in San Francisco that think they should just like shoot all the homeless people in the head. Right?
You know, they'll say, like, you know, libertarians might be more inclined to say that, like, look, that's not the cops aren't all bad. Like, there's a few bad apples, but they'll also say, and no apple, good or bad, should have a tank.
Well, like, but is the analysis?
I should have a tank as a libertarian.
Yeah, I should be able to own one, and actually I have one in my basement, and it should be legal to drive around.
And I bought it with gold that I had buried in the backyard.
I guess my issue is, like, to me, it's gonna be the people left of center that have an actual holistic understanding of why it is that militarized cops in America doing the things that American cops do are bad, right? I don't see, like, and especially, Connor, given to what you said before, right, that, like, audiences want, they don't want this, like, presumed annoying false neutrality of publications. True. I do think that's true. I think Americans are sick of that shit. It's annoying, right? And what they want is team sports, right? They want their team to win, and they want their arguments to be good, and they want to, you know, they want outrage, right? Because this fucking America's outrageous, right? Yeah. Who is going to read this magazine with all these different fucking viewpoints, three of which at the very least probably don't align with them? I don't see it, man.
Yeah, no. This publication will probably not convert anyone or, like, gain, I shouldn't say new readers, because, I mean, I'll read it. I'll read it just to, like, shit on it, I suppose. But yeah, going back to, like, what I said about your coworker, like, this isn't going to be on my mechanic's computer when I go in there being like, dang, this Matt Brunig makes some good points.
Like, oh yeah. Also, I don't know how much Matt Brunig is going to like. Matt Brunig may have agreed to write like one piece for them.
Yeah. I think the baseball analogy is apt in this situation. It's the team sports thing. Because I'm looking at the list of writers that are going to be contributing to this. Brunig is the most left-leaning person.
Yeah, for those who, by the way, are not terminally online, Matt Brunig is like a socialist guy who they kind of work for like American Families Project. What do they call that thing? The People's Family Project or whatever. He was on the Bernie campaign for a little bit. He mostly writes about child care and housing policy and how, you know, we should do more of it, basically, in the United States.
He doesn't miss often. If he does, like, I like Matt Brunig quite a bit, but like we said, Matty Glacius, Joey Politano, Derek Thompson, like, these people are not going. This roster is wildly centrist or right of center
or right of center.
Iglesias or Derek Thompson. Now, the thing that I can't shake is the reason why they're doing this. We're going to bring conservatives, liberals, libertarians, and socialists, which is also like, oh, no anarchist, no libertarian Marxist. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, how, yeah.
What a myopic approach to news. but
where's my juche boys, dude? Let's get some juche.
Where are the tankies? Where are the MLMs?
Yeah, why stop there? What, get a couple fascists to write for you, man.
Yeah,
it's Jerusalem. Get them just straight up neo-Nazis that disagree with Trump. They're like, he's not racist enough. Like,
this week we've got a breakdown on the latest season of Drag Race by Itamar Ben-Gvir.
Yeah, Jesus.
So anyway, the thing that I can't shake about this is the fact that they're bringing all these different people to the table to like come up with solutions. This is Obama's first cabinet. Remember, he's yes. like, I'm going to have liberals. I'm going to have conservatives. I need to hear everyone's opinion. And it was this approach of like, I am going to make sure that all voices are heard because I don't want anyone to think that I am so arrogant to think that like my way is the only way.
I don't want anyone to be mad at me. Right.
Yeah.
And this is, by the way, the kind of an extension of exactly what you're talking about, right? Big tent liberalism that just failed at the fucking ballot box last year, right? We just did this where it's like, there's something for everybody. And it's like, yeah, but you failed to have a coherent message or any promises, right? You are ideologically vacuous because
That's
you're no
right.
one thing, right?
That's
you're
right.
You're a big tent full of everyone. And it's like, you're going to lose to the guy who's like, I'm going to do whatever, right? I'm going to solve all your problems.
We got
do it by beating them up.
We got Mindy Kaling. We got Dick Cheney. We got what's that? Trans people? No, we're not going to let a single
trans
one of them
know.
Speak at the DNC. Come on. What are you fucking insane?
We do
Come
have
on.
Beyonce.
A trans person? Come on. we'll mention them, but we're not going to let them speak. Because they're actually ruining the party and they're going to be the reason we lose the election. I'm calling it right now. Fucking idiots.
I mean,
sorry. I get really worked up about the whole Democrat.
You should.
Like, we lost because of trans people. It's like, what? You weren't championing him. Colin Allred leading up to the election had an ad saying, I don't want women in, or I don't want men and women sports. Ted Cruz is lying about me saying that. It's like,
yeah, I'm a Republican, basically. I'm a shittier version of Republican. I'm a Republican that's from the pedophile party, actually, right? And it's like, why are you doing this? If you cannot accept, like, I don't know. I mean, we're relitigating the election again, but it is so infuriating because it never stops, right? There was another round of this shit online from motherfuckers that write for like the New York Times about how like the Gaza vote like lost. Fucking Kamala the election. And it's like, dude, this was so fucking easy for you to do politics on. These people were so incredibly straightforward, right? And by the way, they were Democrats, right? These are Democrats. They were so straightforward about what they wanted you to do. It wasn't that much, right? It wasn't invading and occupying Israel, I promise, right?
It's also just like so
and
fucking,
you didn't do any of it.
It's also just so fucking infuriating that they really just want to give it one single cause. It was like, oh, it's trans people. Oh, it's a Jill Stein protest vote. Actually, it was these Palestine lovers. Like, that's what happened. That's why we lost, because of this one little group. And instead of like, dude, can't you just take a step back and realize that you ran a campaign over, we are relitigating. It's like, you ran a rushed campaign in 100 days. You didn't have a primary. You're supposed to be the party that's going to save democracy from the bad orange man, and you're not doing democracy.
Yeah, I mean, they fucking blew it. But like the reason that this is being brought up is every time you see the argument, every time you see somebody that's doing this shtick, right, like Jerusalem Demsis, this is that again. It's never and like until I'm pretty certain that like until this is actually like roundly defeated and until that part of the party is like dead of old age or like all voted out of office, this is never going to stop. You're never going to stop getting these people trying to take another bite at the apple, right? Let's finish this real quick, and then we'll get to like why and wrap up maybe.
Okay.
But we will only publish people who are committed to seeking truth from facts and stopping illiberalism from destroying this country. Visit theargumentmag.com today to subscribe.
Like, just a thing real quick, and this is too mostly to the point that they keep saying the word liberalism, and it's unclear, like I said, like what they're talking about. Is it like a political theory of liberalism, right? Like liberalism with like a big L? Is it like structural liberalism? Because like, I'm sorry, right? If your big complaint is Donald Trump, Donald Trump is a product of fucking liberalism. He got elected, right? They have illiberal ideas, right? But again, their ability to implement those ideas so far has been entirely liberal, right? They elect people to the fucking political structure that liberalism made and maintained, and then they use the rule. I don't know that they've been doing anything particularly illegal, right? Even when they do things that are particularly illegal, that the courts find illegal, they've found legal ways to restructure the courts to allow them to keep doing those things, right? I don't see a way where you're either talking about the spirit of liberalism, right? But then these, like, the spirit of liberalism and Donald Trump being antithetical to that, which I agree with, right? But I'm sorry, right? Like, the argument, and Ms. Jerusalem Demsis has written at length about, like, how there's too much democracy in, like, housing policy and shit, right? Is that illiberal, right? Like, where do these things begin and where do they end? And I think ultimately the issue with this is, this person is fucking astroturfed, right? You would not be surprised to learn that this thing that's being talked about, Argument Mag, is a fucking astroturfing device for a bunch of billionaires, and they're the same billionaires who would like to do very liberal housing policy, right? Who want deregulation and shit. Mm-hmm.
I got something to say on this.
Yeah, go ahead.
The argument over what is liberal, what is, and like what you said earlier of the three or four various definitions of liberal. Got my degree in political philosophy. I've had to do a lot of classes on this, attend a lot of reading groups, and I think, truly, in my heart of hearts, who fucking cares? And, like, I mean this in the nicest way possible, and I don't mean this in a way to just, like, shut you down or shut myself down or shut the argument down. It's just like, dude, why are we defining it? Why are we defining it when, like, you can't define it? Your opposition has defined it for yourself and for everybody else. This is a stupid fucking thing to talk about sometimes. And I always go back to this class I was in, and we're talking about the 2004 election when George W. Bush called John Kerry he's just a latte sipping liberal. And someone in my class who really wanted to go into politics, bleep this if you want, but they're now deeply involved with the state of Maryland's education department. but they said, at that point in time, John Kerry should have said, you're right, I am a liberal, because liberals stand for truth. Liberals stand for liberty, for freedom and democracy, and like going through like John Stuart Mill's idea of like on liberty, right? And in that moment, I was like, you don't know a fucking thing about like actual working day, shovel and pail politics. Like, you think you're going to go in to like have a normal conversation? Like, and granted, we were in a college classroom, so of course we're like, yes, big ideas. I'm like, am I the only motherfucker who has like a redneck dad? Like, yeah. Go ahead.
That understands that the word liberal is just means gay, right? Like, that's, it is like essentially what that codes as, I guess. Yeah. Is,
you can say it as like, I'm liberal. And then, like, I support gay rights, or you're liberal, which means, like, you just said, like, no, you are gay, right?
You are gay. I mean, it's true, right? Like,
so I want to talk about this reply that's underneath the video, and I'm going to read it in its entirety. I'm going to read it in its entirety. What do you mean by liberal economics? A clear-eyed commitment to a market-based economy with a robust safety net to protect the most vulnerable, parentheses, historically liberal, close parentheses? Or the deeply illiberal Leninist Marxist orthodoxy that is ascendant in the party today? And I'm just like,
Leninist Marxist.
And all that aside, like, whether or not he's right or wrong, whatever. But I'm just like, healthcare, please. Please, healthcare.
This guy is, by the way, a business exec, Oakland native, former Bay Area metal legend. This is recovering Marxist.
Recovering Marxist.
Yeah. This is one of like the worst kinds of like Twitter accounts. That's like the top reply on this stupid video.
And it's just, I mean, 6 likes, 29 comments. So definitely got fucking ratioed. But it's just like, dude, how the fuck do you plan to just be like, we're going to change the way people think and save this country by asking the hoi polloi, what is liberalism versus capital L liberalism? It's like, dude, what the fuck are we doing? You are going to keep losing. You're going to keep losing because Trump followed the most basic, basic political rule in this country, which is we have a 24-hour news cycle, free democracy, that you have to have a, you know, quote unquote free press, where you have to convince people of things, right? And he did the, he followed the most basic rule. Kiss. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
That's it. And if you can't keep it simple, you lie. And you just say, like, well, the reason why it's not working is because of that guy. And they're like, that guy, get him.
Well, and I mean, it, fundamentally, right, the conservatives do not, like, the conservative argument does not have to be constructive. It merely has to be contrasting, right? They are, like, in debate terms, right, they're the negative, right? They only have to clash with the status quo. In that way, they are like counter-structural.
Yeah,
right? They have to say this structure isn't working, and I'm dispositive to the structure. I think less structure would be better for us. Right?
And even then, like this lady is she was the president of the debate team, so she knows like the burden of proof and the burden of clash. It is so astounding to me that the Republican Party, the Trump Party, does not need the burden of proof. They're following debate rules, the argument. They're like, I'm sorry, sir, but the burden of proof is on you. It's like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
It was never on me. I don't have to prove a damn thing. Like, what the fuck are we doing? My biggest takeaway from this argument, Mac, thing is like, so y'all really don't know what to fucking do.
Yeah, I mean, like, so you asked earlier, right, like, why define liberalism? And I think that comment is very illustrative. And like, I don't really want to talk at length about like the liberal economics thing, right? Labor unions basically won those, like the prosperity for American workers, not liberalism, and not certainly like liberal economics, like writ large. But you're illustrating the point exactly, right, which is like losing to Trump is a byproduct of ascribing to the liberal order, right? Which is like the Democrats are protecting the liberal order. And the narrative that Democrats go with is that they are the protectors of the liberal order. And like Jerusalem Demsis says, right, the liberal order, just as a byproduct, produces all of this prosperity that makes our lives good, right? It's not a political movement. It's certainly not leftist political movements and like organizations that have won all those things, right? And there is an actual disconnect there for voters, right? Because you as Joe Biden, you as Kamala Harris, you as Hillary Clinton, are not promising anything concrete, right? Because you aren't one of the peoples of those movements, right? The movements that actually get something will say, we are trying to achieve women's suffrage. We're trying to achieve civil rights. We're trying to achieve, we're going to try and pass the fucking Civil Rights Act or like end a war, right? But those guys don't promise any of that, right? Because they're not part of that movement. And by the way, they don't accomplish any of the things that they don't promise, right? They don't bring you any prosperity, right? Like Joe Biden's administration, for instance, was not a land of fucking milk and honey, right? Despite the fact that a lot of people have argued that liberalism is this just self-generating feature that brings prosperity, that Jerusalem Demsis is arguing as well, right? And like, I don't know that they, I don't, like you'd say, like, why try and define it? Because they're conflating these two things openly. They're conflating a system that allows for movements, right? Left-wing movements to force some change that makes things better for individuals, right? Or at least put pressure on the system to allow for those changes to happen, with liberalism writ large, our ability to vote in elections, I guess, or like have a constitution or have like certain rights guaranteed under the state, right? And that's the Joe Biden version of liberalism, where like we have to protect this thing so we can have elections. Who gives a fuck if you get anything new during my administration, right? And unfortunately, I feel like, I mean, I guess two times out of three, that's lost to the game show host, right?
I want to bring something up. We were going back and forth about this. Hang on. There's one thing that you particularly said about, let's see, voters don't have power. They entrust power to movements. They give their vote and time to. In the U.S., we don't even really have movements. We just have people. I think, and this is something that kind of was like at the back of my mind when we started watching this video, when they're talking about these, like, these are the things liberals used to stand for. These are the things liberals used to stand for. These are not popular positions.
No,
at their inception, this took grassroots fighting from real people. You get a grassroots movement that's actually doing the fucking work, and then they find someone charismatic enough to run on that shit. and then eventually they will capitulate to the people. Because if you pass deeply unpopular legislation, then you lose. You lose big time. LBJ knew this when he's like, we've lost the South for a fucking generation because I pushed forward legislation that is deeply unpopular with them, with their voters. Look,
I mean, even
I just have a lot of disdain for people who keep saying, like, I mean, I'm riled up about the Matty Iglesias tweets that have been coming out over the past 24 hours. They're just like, leftists are deeply unserious people. It's like, dude, who do you think fights for the big change that you are so fucking against until it's popular or it's politically safe for you to be?
Oh, then they'll take credit for it. And then they'll include it in shit like this. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%.
I just see this and it's just like, an article doesn't change anyone's fucking mind because one, no one's going to fucking read it. And two, it's like cognitive dissonance is going to give you resistance to even attempting to read a headline or clicking on a headline that pisses you off.
Right.
And so, I mean, yeah, man, I think the argument is really forgetting the fucking people who do the daily work, who do the policy analysis, who do the actual like grassroots canvassing, or if not grassroots canvassing, then the actual like 9-to-5 shit of making something happen. Oh, God. These fucking global elites get to sit in their WeWorks and chalk out an op-ed.
Well, I mean, yeah. So, but they're paid agents, right? Like, I'm not joking. Like, so let's talk about like who this magazine is for. And I don't really mean like a readership. I mean like who, because this is extremely astroturfed. It has like all, and that's why one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it so much is like if you see these signposts, this is obviously like part and parcel of a very calculated and at this point kind of polished playbook, right? To the point that it's like predictable, right? So like when they first do like the Abraham Lincoln bit, it's like laughable. You're like, oh, of course, right? They're gonna do this. Like, so the argument, right? As a magazine. One, very funny, right? It's been valuated already, which is, it's a thing that doesn't have a product yet. And they've said like, they've done fundraising rounds, right? Which basically they're treating it like a venture capitalist fund, like a fucking a business in California that's going to come up with a new way to do cancer research or some shit, right? They're treating it that way, like a startup, right? And that's because it's created and invested in by a bunch of fucking venture capitalists, right? And those are the same kind of like Silicon Valley tech bros that are huge funders of like Kamala Harris, right? Another reason why this seems so the same with a kind of centrist, YIMBY, by the way, like pro-abundance, right? The Ezra Klein people, right? The funders include like Emergent Ventures, which is this fucking Tyler Cohen guy who's like a Peter Thiel dude, right? So he's a big funder. Dustin Moskowitz was like a Facebook co-founder. He's one of like the also co-founded that wasn't Zuckerberg. He runs like Open Philanthropy, which sounds like a Soros outfit, but isn't, right? And he's on it, right? He's super big into like AI shit and fucking abundance stuff. He's just another one of these, by the way, and he's going to be extremely libertarian, right? He's going to be very hands off my taxes, let me do it myself as a tech guy. Another thing crossover that you're going to see is like a now abandoned kind of ethos, which is that effective altruist movement, Connor. I don't know if you remember that, but that movement of like tech guys that are like, please don't tax my income because I'm more efficient than the government at doing social programs by essentially doing charity. I mean, it seems insane now, but this was like an actual thing that guys like that Matty Iglesias, right, was fucking arguing for like years ago. It's all the same like regurgitated shit forever, it feels like, right? But that's why it has this framing. That's why it has this, I think, like ideological background. It's why it seems to be a product that probably nobody's going to fucking buy or read or definitely like make any difference. It's because these guys want to do something with their money to signal politically, I feel like, right? Or by the way, to do an investment vehicle that theoretically they could sell to somebody else because they're setting themselves up for that too, right?
Yeah.
They're class A investors in this fucking startup of a opinion journalism outfit. it's just like deeply dark in every way, I suppose, right? And it has this like, and especially dark because it has this like cheery millennial demeanor that starts with that little scene where she's like, you know, I'm just adjusting my mic. Let me just get comfortable in my fucking chair, right? And it's just like billionaire tech ghouls, right? It's the same guys that are basically, right, a couple snorts of fucking coke away from being Peter Thiel, right?
Yeah, yeah, no shit. Yeah, definitely. I'm thinking about like what we said on the abundance episode of like who this book is written by and for yes men of the abundance world. And so like and I'm thinking about this just because I was at the bookstore the other day and I saw this old guy pick up a copy of Abundance and start flipping through it. And I almost went over to him and be like, it's not good.
Just shut it in front of him.
Don't do it, man. Listen to my review of this.
I think the reality is that there are people that are going to be influenced by this, and they're the same people that are influenced by Abundance. And some of those people work for like some of those people are, by the way, like Pete Buttigieg and like Democrat staffers, right? Like famously, I think Matty Iglesias was like very influential in the Biden White House, right? Which is like so depressing. But like people that are important read this shit and think that it matters and is very smart.
Matty Iglesias has a abysmal track record for dick writing.
Oh, he's the worst.
Like Sam Bankman-Fried, just loving Sam Bankman-Fried. Oh my gosh.
I mean, again, right? Like it's the Chapo thing, right? Just like anybody that's above the age of 30 in media, check what they said about the Iraq War, right? Just like go back and like see what they said about that. Yeah. And then judge them on that. And almost one-to-one, there's almost nobody that's like improved since then, really, right? Maybe like Liz Warren, I don't know.
All right. Do we got anything else to say about the argument?
No, I
will say there are four articles written for the argument right now, and three of them are by Jerusalem Demsas. How do we live with each other? The only one that's not written by her is by a woman named Kelsey Piper. And it says, giving people money helped less than I thought it would. Ending the war on poverty will take more than cash transfers.
By the way, this is Kelsey Piper is the, I believe, the executive editor. She worked on a bunch of the Effective Altruist stuff. That's the connection there. Kelsey Piper is like a big, she's like on the head of like, some stupid Effective Altruist, like coalition or some shit.
This is a little shitty for me to say. I got a little shitty thing to say. So if you go to Kelsey Piper's, Substack, there are two posts, one 17 hours ago of her piece for the argument and one from November 24th, 2022, for Thinking Out Loud, her newsletter, and it says coming soon. And then you go to Thinking Out Loud, and she never wrote anything for it.
Hey, you know what? I know what it's like, Kelsey. I'm not judging you.
Happens to the best of us.
Yep, yep, yep. Well, we don't work for billionaires, but I guess it probably happens to them too, huh?
Yeah, I can't wait to see Bill Ackman say big things coming soon.
Yeah, well, actually, Bill Ackman's famous for that kind of bullshit.
Oh, great.
Yeah. All these people suck. By the way, like while I've been scrolling for like other stuff, while I was scrolling like looking for a name on Twitter, I saw that Unheard already wrote like an article that's like the argument is, you know, warmed over neoliberalism or whatever. So unfortunately, Connor, somebody's already beat us to the punch on this.
Whatever.
An actual good magazine. No, it's fine.
I could write for the argument. I'm reading their pitch thing, and I kind of want to pitch, like, I read Abundance, and I think it's really bad, and I think I could find, like, a housing expert here in Houston and just be like, so zoning's the only issue, right? And they just look at me like, what are you fucking insane?
Are you fucking stupid? So I tried to apply the abundance model to my conversation with, right? Like whatever.
Yeah. I feel like you're regulating me too much. And that's what I'll say to my fiance. You're regulating my ass.
I'm being overly regulated. Yeah. I'm being emotionally regulated right now.
You need to let me do what I want to do. I should be allowed to smoke weed at 10 a.m.
Yes.
The reason I don't own a house is because you won't let me smoke weed at 10 a.m. I talked about
that's when true. Said,
let me smoke weed at 10 a.m.
The reason I can't make the down payment on the house is because you won't let me smoke. Now I can't grind. I have to rise and grind, rise and bake and grind.
I have to rise and grind this weed up so that I can smoke.
Yeah, right. Duh.
One of us smokes weed, the other doesn't.
that is unfortunately true. I don't even smoke fucking cigarettes anymore, man. I had to quit.
Oh, this congratulations.
Sucks. No, it sucks. I hate it. I want to go back to smoking again. This is why I always quit.
You should go back and watch that Twitch. I saw the Twitch episode I did last week was about smoking. And there's several shots of me, like a caller is talking about how much they love smoking cigarettes. And you can just see my face. I'm like, yes. Like I get so, by the end of it, I'm just like tapping my two fingers against my mouth. Yeah. Like,
how long has it been, by the way?
2.5 years.
God damn, nice, man.
No alcohol, no cigarette. Great. Yeah, awesome. Thanks. I'd rather you give me some cigarette. The last cigarette I had
was give me a fucking cigarette. Yeah,
the last cigarette I had actually was with you when you came through town and we did that like movie weekend and we watched like all the movies. And you gave me a cigarette and my backyard was like, yeah, whatever. I bet I can have like one. And I think I smoked like 25% of it and was like started sweating profusely. It was like, I'm going to throw up. Wait, no, I'm going to shit my pants. I got to go.
That was a crazy weekend because I think I chain smoked 2 packs of cigarettes. We watched like 6 movies or something.
Yeah, we had fun.
Oh, it was a great weekend.
Yeah.
So wait, so I might throw it up at the beginning. Do we want to do Roblox? Just real quick.
No, it's okay. So
that's plenty
late
for now.
Yeah, it's so late.
Oh my God, it's almost 10 o'clock. Okay, let's go to bed.
I will say, listeners, I did read the Fort Bragg Cartel book. It is tough. It is a great book. I have a hard time recommending it to people because it is so emotionally taxing and grueling. But I will say it has been very funny to hear Seth Harp, the author of the book, go on all these different podcasts. And he is a deeply serious, I dare I say, unfunny man. And it's just really funny to hear him on Chapo and you just hear like... and then it's just like vaping. You have like a dog that just like has a metal jaw. It's like, yeah, eat these brains, man. And then like, you know, Will and Felix are just laughing and you hear Seth go, that's right, Felix, it's definitely like just trying to crack it, like Brace Belden trying to get this guy to laugh, and he's just like, the light in my life went out when I watched my friend roll over a woman in Afghanistan. He's like, okay. It's been deeply funny in a dark way to hear people try to get Seth Harp to laugh.
Yeah, he doesn't, and there's not like a lot of mirth in his voice, I suppose.
No.
Like, even when I can tell he's making a joke, like I've listened to on 4 different podcasts now. Even when he's making a joke, it doesn't come through in his voice. He's just so flat.
Yeah, he's very monotone. And I mean, you know, he kind of gets into it in the book, but if I saw half the shit that he, you know, didn't include in the book, yeah, I wouldn't be smart. It would be hard. It would be really hard to laugh. So if you've got the stomach for it, if you got the stones, read the Fort Bragg Cartel. But if not, just listen to him talk about it on a podcast, because there are a couple things in that book that I wish I could unread. You farting?
Yes, I was farting, yes. I was trying to do a controlled fart.
I think we should call it on that then. Oh, right. My gosh.
I guess I'm leaving that in now. You fucking...
We can hang on.
No, fucking leave it in. I like it. All right. I think it's good, actually. Well, make it impossible for me to cut.
On that note, Excelsior Propagandos, and as always, keep your eyes on the skies.
Bye, guys.